fish, 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 fish. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.
I'm waiting.
I said,
I'm
waiting. Fish, fish, fish,
keep it going.
Fish, 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 fishing. Just to ease my mind.
There it is. That's what I wait for. You know, we had probably 30, 35 Cub Scouts at Fish and Frank's last night. We had a big Cub Scout troop and all their parents and everything else. And Robert was director of programming last night. He had Captain Dwayne French out in the seminar area answering fishing questions. He had Captain Carl Buttigieg in the line room where the reels and the rods and line machines and all that are, helping them learn how to tie knots. And then Robert was in the bait room answering all the questions on the crabs and the shrimp and the blue crabs, the fiddler crabs, the pinfish, the shrimp, and all that other stuff. And they were moving the groups from one speaker to the other around the store, and it was all pretty cool. And one of the things I asked the kids was, why do people go fishing? And the one thing they didn't get was to relax, to enjoy yourself, just to kick back and, you know, oh, to eat and to, you know, catch fish and to have fun and, you know, it's exciting, oh, it's too boring, you know, all these things. But number one for me lately in the last few years, I don't know where my mouth is today. Oh, by the way, Robert's here today. The blind tarpon himself sitting in the chair across from me. And RJ in the control booth. We got a new feature. Da-da-da-da, new feature. Da-da-da-da. Okay. If you have questions while we're da-da-da-da on the air, new feature, 941-268-6460. You can text us questions while we're doing the show. I didn't really set the phone up for, you know, conversations and calling us because we can't have your, I don't have any way of getting you on the air. But if you will text us, we will, read your question and answer it while we're on the air. And that's 941-268-6460. 941-268-6460. Text us any questions you want, or, you know, help about the show, like shut up, say something worthwhile. I can do all those things.
Say something worthwhile?
Yeah, I don't think so. But
okay.
Yeah, all right.
As long as there's no overly expectations here.
Yes, okay. I kind of knew I was going down on that one. All right. But anyway, Robert's got all these Cub Scouters going around and all their parents. Robert, I think the parents get more excited about it than the kids sometimes.
Yeah, they were having a really good time. They were asking some questions and taking a lot of pictures of their kids as they were playing with some of the different things, you know, the shrimp and the crabs. They got a kick out of the crabs.
It's one of my favorite parts about the store is being able to be part zoo, part retail store, part museum, part... It's just a weird place. And I guess that kind of sums it up, but it's still a lot of fun after all these years to have a whole bunch of second and third graders, you know, just descend upon the store, you know. It was really cool. Speaking of descending upon or ascending upon Spanish mackerel, anything good, bad, or ugly with them?
I'd say it's a good. It's really good if you're out in the Gulf, you know, minus the wind. But in the harbor itself, there's more fish below Cape Hayes from, like, you know, that burnt store bar out to Boca Grande or Cape Hayes out to Boca Grande, that whole what you call the Straits. That area's got a lot of bait fish in it and a lot of Spanish mackerel. And then you get out into the pass, you get really good numbers. And just off the beaches, if you're wanting to stay in the upper harbor and troll around for them, you are going to pick up a few. It's just not going to be nonstop action, but definitely still targetable.
Yeah, all right, so my favorite trolling lures obviously are Storm Twitch Stick, and then I'm going to kind of go from one to the other, but spoons work so well on them. Have you ever trolled a gotcha? I have never trolled a gotcha that I remember.
I honestly haven't.
Yeah, I've always casted a gotcha.
As fast as I've reeled it, though, I could see it trolling all right.
Yeah, I think maybe if you trolled one of those little gotchas, that might be a good idea, too.
Yeah.
But there's so many other things you can troll. But just remember, if you're trolling a spoon, use monofilament line. Or I'm going to enjoy it because you're going to be coming in replacing $20-some worth of braided because you can't get the twists and spins out of it. You can on a mono, drag it behind the boat. 2-3 minutes, dragging bare monofilament line through the water. It starts to look like wrought iron when it gets twisted up, so the water easily straightens it out. You reel back in brand new line. We haven't come up with a good thing on the braided yet, but we're working on it. But for right now, if you're going to troll spoons, use monofilament. For any other lure, just use your normal braided line. What's going on in the deep holes in the harbor? For most of the year, we sit there and go, what's going on? Catfish, nothing. What's out there in the deep holes?
Right now, the tarpon have been the big thing. There has been a few small sharks, but the main consistent thing is...
I just wanted to go, tarpon are the big thing. No, they're the widow tigs. They're only 200 pounds. They're widow fish. You know, tarpon are the widow fish out there. They're only 2 pounds, 3 pounds. I got a big one. You'll go on maybe 5. But
no, that's a different area for the little guys.
They're 200. These fish are 100 to 200 pounds.
Yeah, they're very, very much adult-sized fish. These are not that juvenile or in-between juvenile. These fish are all averaging about 150 pounds. And the weird part is the water temperature is so cool right now. They're not showing themselves in as much as there, as many fish as there are out there.
Okay, wait a minute. All right. Now, I know my brain's a little fuzzy. You started saying something, I'm thinking perfect stripper weight. But, you know, my dad is in the hospital. So, you know, he's in ICU down at the hospital. And then my mom ended up in the hospital this morning. So dad's in one room at one end of the hospital. My mom's in the room at the other end of the hospital. So, you know, I know my brain isn't working exactly perfect, but what the heck does water temperature have to do with not seeing tarpon?
Oxygen in the water.
Oxygen in the water.
Yep.
That has nothing to do with stripper weight, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right.
Oxygen in the water is, you know, when the water temperature is cooler, there's more oxygen in the water. So really the only thing that those tarpon have to roll for is to make themselves more buoyant in the water. And since Charlotte Harbor is relatively shallow, they aren't having to use it as much. It's when they get out into that 30-plus feet of water is when you really notice it, or when there's a lot less dissolved oxygen in the water column. So these fish are really staying down closer towards the bottom or in the middle of the water column, and it seems like they're showing themselves late in the afternoon for some reason, and I don't know if it's because they're happy fish and rolling around, or because of this full moon the last couple days is getting them excited, so they're coming up to the surface in that late afternoon getting excited. But, you know, guys are going out and, well, Richie this morning, he was 1 for 4 so far, and he's just
okay,
a daily
batter,
fishing.
We're stepped to the plate now, coming up, and he's 1 for 4. What the heck does 1 to 4 mean?
He landed one fish and has hooked 4. You know, tarpon are one of the few fish, along with, like, billfish, where they actually count the hookups and the lands.
That's just from keeping you from getting too depressed over what you spent on the charter.
I was going to say,
exactly.
You know, you're out there and you've missed 6 fish, and you say, well, I'm 1 for 6. You know, I guess it makes you feel better.
Must have been a golfer did that. I still want to know who the clown was that came up with, you touch the leader, so it's a legal catch.
Right.
That just doesn't make any sense.
That has
to
be a rich guy.
Something.
That had to be high-end charters.
There was a time years ago where you had to take a scale from the fish.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that counted as you landed it. And
Somebody used to bring the fish back to shore.
That's right.
And so it was a way of not having to kill the fish. You just take a scale from it.
Right, right.
And then they decided, well, they weren't doing well enough, so, well, yeah, you might have caught 3, but I hooked up 6. Well, you lost them, loser.
Right. No,
well, I didn't mean that. Yes, right. I did. No, I didn't. Yes, I might have.
Yes, you did.
I'm scared. Not scared. I'm tired.
Say,
I've been
really scared.
Awake, yeah. Me
that
scared. I don't.
Frank and,
yeah,
no,
it's probably
not
happening.
Yeah,
okay.
No.
Gulf temperature is 77.7 in St. Pete, normally 74. Pensacola, 72, normally 71, right on track there. And Key West is 81, normally 78, so about a couple degrees above normal.
Right.
But we've got some weather moving in. Yeah. Peace River up in Arcadia is running pretty light. We've only got 270 cubic feet per second, which means the water in the harbor is very, very clear. Super clear. Because without the brown water coming down the river, you have gin clear water in the harbor. That's why we talk about those water flows on the river, to give you an idea how brown the water is going to be before you get out there. And right now, gin clear. But with the water temperatures, basically we're hovering in the middle to high 70s. So this is perfect. Bring on the tarpon stuff. Yeah. Now, you're saying because of those perfect water temperatures, the tarpon do not have to come up and gulp air. Without gulping air, they're harder to see.
Exactly.
So if you're out there in the middle of the harbor, and May and June are the two peak months of fishing in Florida. It's when all the big fish are here. Not when the most people are here, but when the most large fish are here. We've got tarpon, sharks, cobia, there's Goliath grouper, there's all kinds of stuff happening in May and June, and we're kind of building up to it because this is April, right?
Yep.
Okay, I got the month right. You know, hey, I walked into a room. I know why I'm in the room, and I got the month right. I'm all happy.
All right, let's not push it, boys.
Yeah, well, hey, this has been a big day for me, man. That was 3-1. All right. So how are you going to go about, if normally when the water's a little warmer and you see them rolling around, you actually go out, look for the rolling fish, and that's how you're going to tarpon fish.
Right.
What do you think now, Robert? How are you going to go out to target these, you know, behemoths?
I mean, if you've got a good bottom machine, especially if you got a side scan on it, which is almost cheating, you know, but it works so well, is go out there and just start zigzagging around throughout the edges of the holes and through the 20-foot holes and look for fish to pop up on your side scan or bottom scan. Other than that, honestly, the way I would personally do it without a good fish finder, just go out there and very, very slow troll a couple bait busters or some ladyfish behind you, but keep them a fair ways behind you. Because it seems like when we've trolled for tarpon, you know, because it's not super recommended, but it works. As long as there's not a lot of boats concentrated in an area, you just very, very slowly idle, but keep your baits a solid 100-150 feet behind the boat.
Pretty good distance. Now, if you have questions for Robert about this tarpon stuff, 941-268-6460. Text us your questions. I'm sorry about the texting, but we can't actually do the phone stuff yet. We're working on it. But 268-6460 for text questions to Robert. Now, when I'm out there looking for tarpon, I just like to drift. I want to put a couple lines out. I don't want to run the motor. I've had these massive headaches. All I want to do is be kind of quiet, let the boat drift. How am I going to do that? Where would you start? The 20-foot hole, the middle hole, the Pirate Harbor hole, or someplace else?
If right now, because of the where they seem to be the most concentrated, I would probably start right around the Pirate Harbor hole. That seems to be the better of the places in the early mornings and into the early afternoon. And then there has been some fish showing up in the afternoons, which have been showing themselves a little bit better for some weird reason. Those fish have been kind of in the bottom end of the upper 20-foot hole. So almost dead center of the harbor.
You know, it's one thing about radio. You're sitting here trying to describe stuff. You're saying the bottom end of the upper hole.
Right.
So, well, the 20-foot hole on the south end of it.
Well, there's three holes out there. You know.
I know. I'm just thinking, okay, we're successfully describing where to go with the bottom end on the top hole of the back side. Okay.
Yeah, doodly hopper thingamabopper next to the thingamajig.
Yeah, all right. Let me see. I don't know where I'm at here on the notes. RJ, you big tarpon guy?
Until I got old, I used to love tarpon fishing. Yeah, but you know, I'm not willing to get beat up as bad as I used to get beat up. But I think tarpon are the coolest fish in Florida. I mean, there's just so much about them that is primitive and exciting. And to see an animal that big come to the surface, and
it's their ability to jump.
Oh yeah,
if they didn't jump, that fish would have. They call it the Silver King because it's made out of solid silver.
It is. And when it comes up and the sun's behind you, it's like you've hooked on to this electric, you know, powerful energy that comes flying up out of the water. It's a very exciting thing to do.
And because me, if Jack Crevel would learn to jump, I think they'd go first place over tarpon in a week.
Well, I think one of the other, like, my personal coolest thing about him, I mean, the jump is obvious, the most obvious one, but, you know, you can tell, once you've listened a little bit, you can tell the distinct sound of a snook popping and know the difference between a mullet belly slap and a snook popping. Without even turning to look, once you've seen it, heard it, and for me, closing my eyes and just listening to a tarpon as he jumps is one of the coolest distinct sounds to me, because they shake their head so violently that their gills like slap each other, kind of what they call raking, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you just hear this as their gills are just slapping each other, you know, and they shake their head so violently that it's not unusual for them to bleed out of their gills, and that's just because they'll actually break some of those small capillaries that are inside their gills. But that's how violently they shake that head, and to hear that noise as they're jumping, to me, is one of the coolest aspects of them.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go with that. I'm not sure how I'm going to follow up on that, but
yeah,
there's no
following that statement. You should pick another fish, Frank.
Yeah, there was a little bit of passion behind that one. I think. Wow.
And it's just a really neat thing, you know, because I mean, everyone talks about the jumps, and the jumps are spectacular. They go straight up, straight down, sideways, all that good stuff. But if you actually close your eyes and listen to it, it's just super cool.
Going back to my original question, where would you do a drift? I don't want to have any noise. I mean, my head is pounding. I've got a headache it starts right behind my kneecaps and works its way up. Well, all I want to do is sit quiet, and I want to put something out. Now, do I need to use all live bait? Can I use dead bait? Can I use lures? How can I drift, Robert? I want to catch a big fish. I want to sit here peacefully quiet until all hell breaks loose.
Well, I'm going to, one, take some frozen ladyfish with me and try to catch a couple fresh ladyfish before I get all this started. But if I don't, I'm not wasting a lot of time trying to catch bait ever. It just makes me crazy. So, frozen ladyfish and either a DOA...
Now, wait a minute. Whole live chunks, pieces, bottom, sinker, float. How are we doing this? You're not getting off that easy.
No, we're getting there. Whole ladyfish, period. Whether he's live, whether he's dead, doesn't matter. They're 150 to 200 pound fish. They'll swallow it.
So more than 8 inches?
Oh, I would definitely prefer more than 8 inches because then
So big matters. Give me a break. Answer the question.
Bigger than 8 inches because I'm going to reduce the possibility of a sail cat trying to swallow it. So I want something just a little bit beefier because a shark's
14,
probably
going to
eat it,
18.
A cobia is going to eat it, but I want to eliminate or reduce the catfish possibilities. Yeah, 12, 14, 18, 20 inches, it doesn't matter.
All right, now how are you putting a hook into them? About what size hook?
If you're into the circle hook thing, I'm going to say like an 8-0 or a 9-0 in either the owner or the VMC. And the reason why I mention that is because circle hooks are weird and every brand is different in sizes, but owner and VMC circle hooks are very, very similar in size to their own J hooks. So if I was using a J hook, I would be using an 8-0, maybe a 9-0 in a J hook in the owner or VMC, because both those
now
have been strong, sharp hooks. Right through the nose, basically the hard cartilage of the nose.
Okay, so you're going sideways or from underneath and out?
Generally, I go sideways. If the ladyfish is dead, I actually like to go from the bottom jaw and right out through between the eyeballs. But if he's alive, I'm just going to go right through that hard, bony part between his nostrils and his eyeballs. And that way he can swim around a little bit better. But if he's dead, I want that mouth to stay closed. So I'm basically going to close it up by putting a nail through it, essentially, by coming from the bottom jaw and out through the top. That way he doesn't drag through the water funny with his mouth open, because they'll want to twist and tumble a little bit more so.
So basically you're using the hook to keep the mouth closed while you're drifting along pulling that bait fish.
Correct.
Now, is this one am I putting a sinker on this, or how am I rigging this bait fish up? What's your first choice? Then what's your second choice?
Well, my first choice is probably going to be free lining it. But the drift is going to make or break how I'm going to set them up, period. Because if it's a faster drift and I don't have a drift sock, or I forgot a 5-gallon bucket to make a poor man's drift sock, you know, it's going to be going too fast with
now,
the drift.
What a drift sock does, is you can do a 5-gallon bucket, you tie rope to the handle, you just put it in the water and tie it to one of the cleats in the boat. As the wind's blowing the boat across the water, basically across the surface of the water, the bucket and or drift sock anchor system, which is basically a very, very fancy canvas 5-gallon bucket, it pulls against the water, slowing you down. Just like if you tied a brick to a rope and you're going down the hill with a cart, you know.
Right.
It just reduces the amount
of
speed.
It's a big parachute.
Parachute. Underwater parachute. So you've got your drift sock out. Now, how I'm going to tell is when I'm free lining a bait out, I watch that bait and let the boat start drifting. Now, if I see it, the line kind of starting and stopping and the tip of the rod jerking, what that's telling me is I'm dragging on the bottom. That's not where I want to be. I don't want it really dragging on the bottom. So I'm not going fast enough. So at this point, what would you do if I... To me, I'd end up putting it about, about 6-7 feet below a bobber?
Yep.
If exactly. The current's too slow?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to put it exactly about that. Because, you know, generally, you know, we're using a lot of braid line nowadays. And for me, I like about a 4 to 6 foot, preferably closer to a 6 foot long leader. And the bobber styles that we use, their styrofoam floats, that float doesn't want to stay on the braided line very well without slipping with a little bit of weight to it. So what I'll do is pull the stem out, slide the, because these are slotted bobbers, they got a little slit in the center of them, and then a post that holds your line in
place. The ones that work well have two pegs, not the solid post.
Right. So what I'll do is I'll slide it in through my braid line, and then I'll slide it down over my swivel or my line-to-line knot, so the bottom part is on my leader and the top part of the bobber is essentially on my braided line. Then I peg it off, and that holds it in place. Because
okay.
A ladyfish has got a lot of weight to it, so it does want to make that bobber slip. If it's a little crab or a little threadfin, it usually will hold with your braided line, but the ladyfish has got some weight. It wants to pull.
And it's okay if it pulls the bobber below the surface. All you're looking for is not dragging on the bottom. So if you can... Even if the bobber goes below the surface while you're drifting, it's still keeping that bait from being dead on the bottom.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden the wind's picking up, and I look behind my boat, and there I'm seeing my ladyfish dragging on the surface. What do I do now? The current's actually moved too fast. We started out drifting, the current slowed way down, the tide was changing, we put a float on it to keep it up. But now it's going the other way, and it's moving. What do we do at this point?
That's where I'm going to incorporate a sinker into it, but I'm going to experiment with my sizes. I do like the pinch-on weights better than I do the split shots. The pinch-on weight basically is a cylinder-shaped weight with an ear on both sides that you slide your line in through a little slit, and then you fold those little tabs over, which kind of... almost hold it in place to an extent, depending on how much you fold those ears over. But usually I just like to slide a little bit, and that's going to go right down to my hook and my knot. But I'm going to experiment with the size. I might use a 1/4 ounce, a 1/2 ounce, whatever it's going to take to help keep that bait below the surface.
Now, I do it a little differently because I adjoin the weight the same place I would put the bobber, up at the end of my leader. Because I like it when the bait drifts around more, not just dropping as much. So I'm going to put that weight up right where the line and leader come together. I could use an egg sinker. I like the pinch on weights real well. But what I do want is something that I can get off of the line. Because I've got to hand over hand that last little bit if I can't get that sinker off. And sometimes I got to hand over hand it because I didn't tie some fancy... Alger number FG whatever knot, it won't go through my guides. I got a big old swivel sitting on there.
Right.
And so I might have to hand over hand. At that point, I don't really care. But if I've got a fancy knot and I want to reel it right through the guides, I want to wait that I can literally just, like, with a pinch on weight, flip a couple tabs, get it off the line, and finish retrieving the fish. But getting a good drift going is understanding where your bait is while you're drifting. Is it dragging on the bottom? Are you seeing your rod tip kind of bounce and it kind of drags forward? You see the tip kind of pulling down, then all of a sudden pops up. That's dragging on the bottom. A nice even drag is what you'll see when your bait's going through the middle of the water column. If you've got a bobber on and the tide picks up, you're going to look back, you're going to see your bobber. Behind that, you will see your bait right at the surface, dragging along like a topwater, probably not doing you any good. So at this point, you may just simply take off the bobber and let it go free line. That may fix the problem, get it back in the water where the fish will hit it, or you might have to start adding some lead. So understanding your drift, keeping your drift going, not just throw it out there, drift the boat along. There is slot machine fishing. You're gonna have to have some luck to get that one to happen. But for me, I kind of like mixing and matching it. I like the experimentation of the different rigs. Now, do I have to use live bait when I'm doing this, Robert? Is there another option? Because, you know, I'm out, was going after some stuff, but I want to try and catch a tarpon. But I don't have any ladyfish with me. I got nothing with me. I don't even have fish bites. What do I do?
Do you have a DOA bait buster or a storm swim bait?
Of course we do. How dare you go on the water without a DOA bait buster in April, May, or June? That is simply unheard of. Tell them, Captain Fish.
Oh, jeez. That's pretty good. A DOA bait buster is...
I warned you what happened when I'm tired.
I know. Emotional roller coaster and tired is pretty impressive. The DOA bait buster is basically a profile type soft plastic bait fish, and it's got a pre-molded jig head inside the body of the bait. And the one we use is the trolling model because it's a little bit heavier. The hook sits back just a little bit further in the body than the shallow runner or the deep runner, and it just works. I mean, I personally can't explain why it works so darn well.
It's the dumbest
well.
Looking thing ever.
Yeah.
It's just silly. It's rounded at the front. It's got a couple little curl tail.
Little tiny
weird,
curl
dumb,
tail.
Thin things on it. It just catches fish.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Nichols, the owner of DOA, he, with the Terrorize and the DOA bait buster and the DOA shrimp, simple, basic, they catch fish. They work. Number one on tarpon every year since we've been selling bait busters, DOA bait busters, is the bait buster. Now, I like rigging those when I'm trolling. It's very hard. Now, this week we're going to order, because of I want to do some drifting and trolling, we're going to order some of the top, and we're going to order more of the other styles of bait buster. We're going to store them in a different spot so we have our tarpon ones. But I want to use that lighter bait buster just to drift and troll with free line. And I think that'll work. But the normal one, the trolling model, the only way you can really drift that is to bobber it, right?
Unless you got a really strong drift, yeah. Yeah, what I was shown years ago was put it under a bobber. It works. It just works. I mean, there's no explanation for it other than it will flat out crush some fish. We've had days where it outperformed the live thread fins and the live ladyfish that we've had out there.
Yeah, it's $5 for a DOA bait buster. But when you put it under a bobber, let's consider we've got a little bit of a breeze blowing, some other boats going around the area. So when you see a bobber on the surface, you see it going up and down with the waves. It goes real quick across the little tiny waves. You get a couple of great big up and downs when a boat wake goes by. Now, that is attached to the DOA bait buster. So everything that bobber is doing, your lure is doing. It's called bobber jigging. It's some of the most erratic action, some of the most steady action you can get on a jig, because it all comes from the surface of the water. All you're doing is holding onto the rod. The bobber is over there making it go up and down, giving it the action, making sure everything works. And that's pretty bad. I mean, that really works. Once you start thinking about it, hey, every time the bobber goes up and down, the jig goes up and down, this is cool.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. You just let the rod holder do the fishing for you, and you sit back and enjoy yourself and wait for the chaos to happen. It is that simple.
And the one thing, whether it's with a ladyfish or DOA bait buster, when you start looking around and all of the charters, the people take people out to catch tarpon, 7 out of 10 of the fish or 8 out of 10 of the fish are caught by the ones in the rod holder because they're actually in the water. They're not being reeled in and cast out. They actually spend time there. Most often you get hookups with a float on it because the more erratic the waves are, the more violent the jigging of the bait is. And if you've got wave action, you need a more violent action to your jig. If there's very little waves, you don't need that big action. You're not competing with the noise of the waves and the sound and all that. So it literally self-levels to what type of action it should have. Yeah. The only time it doesn't work is on a slack tide with no wind. If it's a piece of glass out there, probably not going
to
help you much.
No, it doesn't. It's a little tougher to use it during that scenario, but that's when you just cast it instead and start retrieving it and work it like a lure.
All right, RJ, shiner fishing. Now, wild shiners, what do they call them? Wild shiners?
Golden shiners.
Golden shiners, wild shiners. It's pretty close to the same species that's raised in the farms. The reason in Florida they're called golden shiners is because the water's a dark golden tannic brown color, and it literally dyes the scales of the shiners gold.
Yes.
If they were in a different lake in a different part of the country, they'd be bright silver. They wouldn't be golden. But they are a slightly different subspecies, I think.
I'm not 100% sure.
I mean, they might be slightly different, but I think they're pretty much the same ones you buy
farm-raised.
Now, I don't like selling wild shiners. I like selling farm-raised because we're not destroying the environment to sell you bait. Now, RJ, you a shiner guy?
Depends on what we're going for.
All right. A fish that, are you big on using shiners?
No, not really. You know, I'm more of an artificial guy, so you're kind of pushing the limits of my knowledge. I don't do a lot of bait fishing.
All right.
And I will if I'm getting totally skunked and everybody else on the boat is pulling in fish, I give in and I say, all right, put something on the end of the hook for me.
But now, I hear they just mowed a spot that makes it, okay, you're going to have to go and fish there.
I'm going to have to go fish it, right, yeah.
It was all weeds and
I was kind of thinking how I was going to get there. Should I get the machete out of the barn and chop my way through? What will the neighbors think as I'm walking down a road carrying a machete? You know, that sort of thing. But they cleared off this little pond that I've been meaning to fish.
I see you walking down the road with the machete and the neighbors going, RJ's having a bad day.
Yeah, yes. leave him alone. He's having a bad day. Yes. So, shiner fishing, freshwater for me is usually shiner fishing, and it's bass. Occasionally you'll catch a gar on shiner.
All right. Bowfin, gar.
Yeah.
The list is almost endless because almost every fish, 99%, eat other smaller fish, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
Now,
and shiners are pretty tough for a minnow.
And that's kind of what
we're getting. Tough little buggers.
You know, what I only found out a few years ago was the minnows and the shiners are the exact same fish. When you're buying the Missouri minnows for crappies and stuff, they're just a smaller version. The other ones are just older. They're just bigger versions of the same fish. But we sell probably, what, about 100 pounds of shiners a week? About that.
Probably.
What percentage do you think goes to saltwater now?
In the last several months, I'd say probably 50% of it. It's been a pretty astronomical amount of people using them for the saltwater.
And people are catching a lot of snook and redfish with them, is from what I've been hearing.
Snook,
and they're using them
small
on the pier.
Tarpon.
Yeah, they're using them on the pier now in LJB, and you'll see them in the buckets when you walk the pier. So, and I think part of it is, like I said, a shiner's a tough little bugger. You can do a lot to him. Stick hooks through his fin in the back, put a hook through his nose. And he's going to live a long time out there, and he's going to be active. It's not a fish that'll go into shock and just lay there. So I've always found shiner fishing is usually pretty productive.
Yeah, it's just, you know, once you do shiners, you're like, okay, well, the shiner did the work.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, and I understand why people do it, because there's a tremendous amount of thrill, because the fish you get on shiners, usually pretty good fish.
Right, right.
I mean, I've got 4-foot gar, 12-pound bass, I've got, you know, big snook, I've got tarpon, but I think we have so much salt in the water, I just wouldn't think they'd live long enough, but boy, they're catching big gar down here at the 41 Bridge. 3-4 foot plus, yes. Alligator gar type fish, or gar, Florida gar.
Florida gar.
You know, but alligator gar, if you don't know what different species are. These big gar fish, and they're banging them at Lashley Park. They're off the north end of the pier, up in Northport, at Elgibene. What's going on with the big gar, and we don't have freshwater going into the system. Why are the freshwater fish there? Why are so many fish hitting these freshwater shiners? They shouldn't be living, but they're actually living long enough to catch big fish. It's a heck of a bait.
Yeah, I mean, they'll live about 5 or 10 minutes, sometimes even up to 15 minutes, depending on the area where you're at. But, you know, the surface water is always, you know, in normal kind of rainy kind of rivers flowing conditions. The first couple feet of the surface will always be freshwater, so that's not surprising. But for them to survive right now, you know, you're averaging about 10 minutes tops on a shiner living in the salt water. And that's because it eventually burns their gills out. It has nothing to do with the oxygen level. It's actually because it's a freshwater species. Its gills and body is not designed to tolerate the mineral content of the salt water. So it actually literally burns their gills in an aspect. But you only need a couple minutes. If you're in the right spot throwing that out there for a tarpon or a snook, sometimes it's 30 seconds it's in the water and it gets crushed. You know, because this is the time of year when they are really starting to try to bulk up after a winter time of
and
just
they get
minor
spawning
foods.
And all that.
Yeah. So that they need this to get ready for their pre-spawn conditions. They've used up all their fat reserves throughout the winter. It's a very good, high protein, high energy, dense bones, dense meat. It's just a good, fulfilling meal for them that they really want this time of year. So if you throw that in the right spot, it doesn't need to be alive for 10 minutes.
I've got a text message call. Then remember, you can have your text message answered by Robert or RJ or any one of the intelligent people. I don't have to do it. 941-268-6460. Question is, do you think that the clear water makes the shiner fishing better? Is that why they're working so good with the clear, because of the clear water?
That's a pretty good question. I think that probably doesn't hurt very much, but I think it's mostly just because this is the time of year where they know they need that for that substance to go out and survive and propagate. You know, they need that for the breeding this time of year. They're traveling long distances to go out towards the passes from up in the rivers or the canal systems. They're traveling 20, 30, 50 miles in some instances to get out to those passes to get ready to spawn. So they need a lot of food to get them there.
Fish bet or fish bowl? What do you think,
well,
RJ?
I think he's part right. I think that clear water has a lot to do, you know, the shiner's profile says eat me. You know, they're easier to spot. Tarpon and snook are very opportunistic feeders. You know, they're not running through the water with their mouth open trying to suck everything in as they go along, like a mackerel or something like that. But so they're more opportunistic, and they're sight feeders. So if they can see it, they're going to hit it. So I think the clear water adds to the effectiveness of the shiner.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
I thought
that was a pretty good question, you know,
yeah,
for our good. First text message.
It's our first question. I'm so excited.
You know,
we got one listener.
941-268-6460. You can text us questions. Now, there is basically let me get this another fish here just for a minute. Let's see. Snook, redfish, how are they doing?
They're doing really pretty darn good. The snook moving out of the canals and out of the rivers, so you're finding them in all sorts of various locations up there. But the east side, the west side, even Lemon Bay has started to perk up a little bit with a mixture of snook and redfish. So most of these fish are under the bushes or right near the edges of the bushes. And they're catching them on a lot of different things right now. Now, the last two nights have been really clear skies with this bright moon. So early bird does not get the worm for the next day or two. Usually you want to get out like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. And as the day progresses, usually the fishing gets better because those fish have fed heavily all night long. And they're just finally full and lethargic in the morning going, I don't need anything right now. So don't beat yourself up too much if you're out there at first light wondering why you're not catching these fish right now.
Well, I'm still full-blown slot machine fishing right now. You put your nickel in the machine, you pull the handle, and the wheel spin, you did really good or you did really bad. And that's the way the fishing is right now, because I've got people telling me how many fish they've caught in Lemon Bay, how spectacular it is. I got other people saying, oh, the red tide killed everything. There's no fish left alive anywhere. Everything's dead. And it's literally back and forth. Part of it might be your attitude, boys and girls, because it's slot machine fishing right now. If you go out, you're having a good time, you catch some fish, you have a great day. If you go out and you're not catching fish, you're going to get frustrated, you're going to make bad decisions, and you're not going to catch fish. But luck is a big deal. If you're in Lemon Bay, there's some great fishing there, and there's also some pretty, you know, spots where there just really isn't much. I will give you a little clue. When you're out fishing, you're standing there with the rod and reel. Are you enjoying being in the sun? Does it feel real good? Wow, the sunshine's great. Or are you starting to say to yourself, man, I'm a little too hot here. I think I want to go stand in the shade. Now, that's going to give you a clue where the fish are. As that sun bakes up on the water, are those fish coming out to get into the sunlight? Are they trying to warm up a little bit in the sunlight? Or is it getting pretty darn hot and those fish are going, man, I think I'm going to move into the shade, under the mangrove, up under a dock? Just how the sun feels on you can give you a good idea of where you're going to go after these fish. You don't have to have a piece of machinery. Just feel the sun on your head. If it gets too hot, go fish in the shade. If it's a little chilly, go fish in the sun. It could be that simple. I hate to break it down easy for you because I do sell a guaranteed fish locator. They will tell you if the fish are in the shade or in the sun. It is $1,999. You can have it with free shipping. And it comes with a black piece of paper on a cardboard box. For only 10 grand, it can be yours. When it's hot, go fish in the bushes.
I've been working on the hat with the hole in the top.
Yeah, that little mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
Reflect the sun in.
Yeah, when the sun reflects into the top of your head, gets too hot, head to the shade. That's really good advice, because I see that especially when people are working the surf along the beach. You know, and especially when it's calm. You know, when the tide is rolling and the waves are rolling, it's not so bad. But there's a time to give up and say, you know, I really shouldn't be fishing out here right now because it's just too damn hot.
Well,
because the fish are thinking the same thing, too. They're going out to deeper water where the sun, the rays of the sun are being diffused more as opposed to how it is in shallow water.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and the other aspect of it is why people are getting frustrated with it, too, is because most people, you know, we've said it over and over again, but most people put out an anchor or their stick it, and they stay there. You know, we are going from winter to summer. We're going from no spawning conditions to total pre-spawn conditions. So these fish are moving a lot. You know, there's a lot of snook here, and you might pull up to the bushes and see 30 snook there. Come back 20 minutes from now, and it's a ghost town. Those fish are moving, slowly working their way, looking for food and looking for the right spot to be as they get closer to those passes to get into their breeding groups.
I had a guy I really enjoyed talking to this morning. And I'd left the hospital, going back to the shop, and going to get Robert, take care of a few business things. And I'm talking to the guy, and he says, I can't understand what happened to the bass. I was out there, and I was catching all of these bass. I mean, there's just bass everywhere. He was just hitting them every second, third cast. And I said, well, that's cool. He said, but they're gone now. I don't know where they went. I'm like, well, made you think they left that lake?
Yeah.
He was in a lake. I said, did you take them? Did you eat them? He says, no, I let them go. I said, you know, so aliens are now coming into Charlotte County. We have verified alien probing of our fish. It's sad. But there's fin probing going on here, boys and girls. Nice. And they're taking the fish, they're putting them in outer space, and then bringing them back a year later when the exact same water temperature, water conditions, you know, when all that comes back perfectly, so you can throw that same lure over and over again. And I said, so you've been going to that same spot, throwing the same thing you had the first three good trips with every time, right? He says, right. I said, so you're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Back to the alien theory.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens is, when you have some really good times there, try to remember what the water, the air felt like. Then, as the weather progresses, if it gets hotter, the fish are probably going to go deeper, get a little cooler water. If it's real bright and sunny out, maybe they went up under the shadow of a dock or something. You're going to have to change, and the definition of consistent catching while you're fishing is consistently changing how you fish. The only consistent thing you want is how many fish you catch. To be doing the same thing all the time and expect it's going to be consistent? No. If you're throwing white bait all the time, you're going to have some of the worst days fishing ever. You'll have some great days, you'll have some mediocre days, but you're never going to be consistent. If you throw shrimp all the time, you're not going to be consistent. You got to throw shrimp when it's good, white bait when it's good, dead bait when it's good, live bait, lures. The more inconsistent you are about the way you fish, the more consistent you will be with the way you catch. And it just kind of works that way.
Well, and a good example is if anybody watches bass tournaments on TV or has read magazines and looked at the photographs of these guys fishing bass tournaments, they've got 8 to 10 rods laying on the front deck of their boat, and every one of those rods has a different lure and a different color on it. If nothing's happening in that spot, they don't just move. They'll actually try a different lure entirely or a different color entirely. Then if that doesn't work, then they maybe move on to the next spot and try it over again. They're not going to... Those are the successful ones that are changing things up, willing to move a lot, and moving, willing to change their baits or lures.
One of the joys, I think, of fishing is pitting my massive brain against this tiny little brain that swims around in the water that usually outsmarts me most of the time. But that's the excitement of fishing. It's not just standing there and throwing something in the water. It's, I need to know the weather. I need to know where the sun is. I need to know what time of year it is. I need to know what bait they're eating, you know, all the rest of it. That's part of the joy.
Speaking of which, we just got a text here. How much effect does the full moon have on a day fishing in the harbor? Is there a rule of thumb for a full moon or non-full moon?
Well, for a full moon, absolutely. I mean, if you can walk outside and read a book at night without any other light, it's too bright out, so those fish are going to feed all night long. But if it's overcast, those fish, it's just like any other normal dark night.
My basic thing is, what effect a full moon has is when it's bright out at night, it's still pretty effective cover, but fish can see their prey. So they get a great visibility. They can go out. They can feed with them being kind of silhouetted because that's still at twilight in a full moon.
Sure.
So they're much more effective predators. So they feed all through that beginning stages before it gets daylight out. Once it hits daylight, they shut off. Now, they're full. They do not have to feed again. They're probably going to start noon, 1, 2 o'clock before they feed again, or maybe even later. So on a full moon, I fish the afternoons. On a new moon, when it's very dark all night, I'm going out first thing in the morning because they've not been able to feed, not been able to effectively capture prey all night long when it's super dark out. So when it's super dark, I'm out there at daylight.
Right.
New moon, daylight. Full moon, afternoon.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
RJ?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, so... It's nice we had a couple of texts here today. Thank you for the text.
And they're very good questions, especially you know, with that moon going on right now. That's pretty darn good.
But it's really not about wave current or how high or low the tides are. literally has to do with the light effect. How bright is it going to be? Like Robert says, if it's overcast, that full moon does not have a lot of effect. If it's raining at night, it's not bright. It's literally how bright is it underwater? Are they effective predators? And they can see the prey. The prey has a harder time seeing them.
That's so, pretty darn good.
Thank you for that. 941-268-6460. We got about a minute left on the show, I think. Actually, 2 minutes. Just want to go, Robert, very quickly. Flying fish?
Flying fish. It's pretty cool. You're talking about clear water, high salinity. The flying fish, they're seeing flying fish out there as close as 8 miles offshore right now. You know, and several different reports from locations. Venice, Stump Pass, and Boca Grande Pass, so they're pretty close.
Number one fish they're catching in Venice very quickly.
Pompano. They're wrecking some pompano from the jetties up there and the beaches all the way up to Sarasota.
Yeah, just look for the little Oriental guys.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of these Oriental guys that come in. I have no idea what country or background, but they're definitely Oriental. I'm sorry if that offends you. Tough luck. But they're great guys.
They're great fishermen.
But when you see them, you're going to find the pompano. These guys are on the money.
Now, that's a new fishing tip, don't you think? Wherever the Oriental guys are fishing, that's where you're going to find pompano.
Well, up by Venice, because these guys go up to Venice, and they're just wrecking the pompano. Yeah. So
they're not just buying one or two pompano jigs at a time. They're buying a handful at a time.
They buy them by the handfuls. These guys are amazing fishing. All right, well, I think I hear the music starting. I'm getting the finger winding and no music. Fish and Frank here. Robert in the chair across from me. RJ in the command and control center. And thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate it. And time to get back to the real world. Oh, I don't want to go. I want to stay here. I don't want to go back to the real world. Help me. NTM.
Just to ease my mind.